Hey guys, welcome back to the Untitled Gadget Podcast. Now we are in the 14th episode and this is me, Harish, hosting the show. So, you know that things are going to go down this week. We didn't do a show last week because we were all busy or tired or lazy. I think a combination of all three. And the news cycle itself was fairly slow, so there wasn't much to talk about. But this week, we're fixing that by going all in on all the devices that launched over the last 2 weeks in India. And we're here to break things down. So, as always, I'm joined by Dhruv and Akshay. And before we get started, let's see what they're doing. How's it going, guys?
Going well, man.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, things are opening up a bit. So, you know, just trying to get a little bit of fresh air in.
Getting shit tons of couriers.
Yes. on that note, actually, Harish, you've been expecting a lot of shipments, yeah?
Yeah, I will first tell you about my adventures with fresh air. So, I go out to receive packages. Well, by go out, I mean just unlock the main door and go into the corridor to pick up the packages. And what do I find once I come back home? A few lizards have managed to get their way in. So, this week has been all about finding ways to drive these fucking lizards out of our house. Number one, I hate all insects and animals of any kind. Number two, I did not know that this part of Hyderabad, there were lizards. I mean, there were lizards in this. I mean, I live on the 9th floor. I don't know how the fuck they climbed 9 floors. Number three, they were all baby lizards too. So all the shit that I read on the internet on how to get rid of lizards did not work on these little fuckers. So fucking hell. That was basically it. We basically thoroughly cleaned every single part of the house. We had to move the bed. One got into the bedroom. I don't know how they got in, basically. So one got into the bedroom and we saw it at 1 p.m. when we were about to go to bed. So we moved the whole fucking bed and had to dismantle. I didn't know my mattress weighed 50 kilos, but my mattress weighs 50 kilos. So we had to move everything and then get rid of it. We had to basically, you can't even kill lizards, right? So we had to drive it out. We had to nudge it to go with a broom.
Why didn't you just pick it up?
Again, did you not hear the part where I said I don't like animals? And these are small lizards, right? So yeah. It's like, they're like twitchy fuckers. So yeah, that was my week. I'm never...
Do you have like mosquitoes?
No, we have
no insects. They feed on that stuff.
Yeah, we have nothing. Like, we have no insects or bugs or any kind. I mean, and our house is insulated. So, I think they've been trying for 2 months to... It looked like they were waiting at the main door, man. For like 2 months. Like, someday this door will open. And when it did, they all came in.
Sounds like a great adventure.
Yeah. I should make a movie on it.
Yeah. Straight to DVD.
Yeah. Instead of snakes on a plane, you get lizards in a... tech filled house.
Yeah. How about you, Dhruv? How's it going with you, man?
Yeah, it's alright. I mean, I got a few drinks in last evening after a really long time, so that was fun. And it's work as usual otherwise. Honestly, don't really have much else to add there. It's boring life right now.
Hey, but it's fun that packages are finally coming, right? After 2 months of me bitching about everything.
We'll get to the tech. Like, I mean, I think we're just doing the non-tech bit right now.
That's what I kept doing, man. I just kept playing games and kept opening packages for the entire week. It was just a frustrating week, man, to be honest. Getting rid of all these packages on my table. But apart from that, nothing eventful, to be honest.
Packages front, like, do you guys want to talk about how all of us are sort of quarantining or, you know, disinfecting packages before opening them?
Yeah, that's a good idea because we receive like 10 times the number of packages
everyone else,
right? So, yeah. Why don't you tell us what you've been doing, Dhruv?
So, for me, it's like I have like a disinfection or quarantine area set up outside my house. With like a big box and stuff. So whatever package comes in goes in there for like a day or two. After that, I'll clean it with, you know, like a alcohol wipe or a Clorox or whatever. Outside the house, remove the outer packaging, toss that out in the bin, and then the inner packaging gets another cleanup, and it stays in another staging area for a day. And at that point, like, you know, if I'm going to get infected, like, clearly it's supposed to happen.
Yeah. Mine's something similar as well. I think when the packages come in, Sana is more, my wife, she's more paranoid than I am, so she disinfects it first. And then after that, I think after a day or two, I open the package. But between that period, Sana also keeps it outside in the sun. I mean, I don't know if it's going to help or not, but why the hell not? I mean, she does that, and then I open the package, and then, as Dhruv said, disinfect the inner packaging and then get to the damn product.
Yeah, I go all out. I think I wasted like about 3 or 4 liters of rubbing alcohol. I just pour that stuff on these packages, because if this virus isn't going to get killed by rubbing alcohol, nothing's going to make any difference. So I use that on the outer stuff, and then I wear gloves when I'm handling all of this, and then it's a set of Clorox and Lysol, and then it's hand sanitizer. Did you guys know that Amazon now sells its own brand hand sanitizer, and it is insane?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, it's amazing. It's under the Solimo brand. And it's on sale now on Amazon India. So go get that. That shit is fantastic. It's the most potent hand sanitizer I've seen in India.
So actually, like this, during this entire lockdown bit, I was just tracking. I like keeping an eye on whatever Amazon is doing with, under their like Amazon Basics brands and all.
Yeah.
They've gotten into way too many product categories. Like, there are alternatives to everything. They're slightly cheaper than everything else, and the quality is fantastic.
Yeah.
And it gets delivered faster.
And that.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys know, they make a crazy amount of margins on these things, because they're basically just taking existing products and then just labeling it, right? So. Yeah. It's not like they're reinventing the wheel. But I was reading something about their batteries in particular. They make a killing off of these in the US. Mm-hmm. And not
just here as well, man. I buy their batteries all the time. So they're making a killing here as well. It's just like the moment you search for batteries, it's right there. Next to Duracell. So
I told you guys about the smart bulbs that I bought a few weeks back, right? So turns out they're literally the same product as the Cisco ones, but better, because it works with the Cisco app as well. But it's like $300 cheaper under the Solimo brand, and it's fantastic. Like, it works ridiculously well. I mean, I was probably going to go with a Hue setup across my house, but I bought 8 of these to start with, and they work exactly how I would want them to. And the brightness level is great, which is usually a problem with some of these, even with the colors. So it's a fantastic product that they're doing at a great price.
Man, that's great. I like how they go into all these categories that are seeing momentum. Every time there's a product that is selling well, Amazon is like, oh yeah, it's selling well. Why don't we sell our own take on it? Must be shit for retailers though, that sell on their platform.
I mean, there has to be some sort of competition issues here though, right? They're setting a monopoly, so to speak.
Well, technically they're also, I mean, I think they can get around that. There was something in the US, I was reading about this, because they're not the default, I mean, they're not like the biggest player, they get away with it. Because even though they sell huge volumes, they're not like the biggest brand when it comes to batteries. So I think that's what gets them off right now.
But if, like, under search, if theirs is the first product that comes up, I guess that poses a problem.
No, so that's why they don't prioritize their own results. It's more to do with the recommendation engine, right? If we both search for batteries, we'll get two different sets of results based on what we've bought in the past. So we'll never, three or four Amazon customers are never going to see the same set of search results anyway. So I think that works for them. I don't know. Yeah, it's a clever business strategy nevertheless. Okay.
I think we should get started now.
Yeah, let's get on with the big news of the last 2 weeks. And that is the Mi 10 series. So Xiaomi finally launched the Mi 10 in India, and the damn phones went, the damn phone, there's no Mi 10 Pro here, went on sale before reviewers got their units, and before the embargo. So that was interesting to see. But other than that, the phone itself is here. You can buy it right now on Amazon India for 50,000. And there's a lot to talk about. It has a 108MP sensor at the back. It's the same one that is used in the Galaxy S20 Ultra. You have a 6.67-inch screen. It has a 90Hz refresh rate. And under the hood, it's running the Snapdragon 865. The base variant in India comes with 8GB of RAM and 128GB of storage. And you get a big 4780 mAh battery, 30W wired and wireless charging. And I think that's about it on the hardware front. So yeah, let's talk about the phone. We've all been using it for a while now. Dhruv, let's start off. What do you think?
Love the hardware. MIUI is nice. I understand what they're doing with it. It's not for me. I think I'm just too used to the Pixel/OnePlus experience, which is close enough.
Right.
Technically, neither of them are stock Android, so whatever. But it's close enough to the stripped-down experience that I like. And and then there's the entire business of Get Apps, which is fucking infuriating.
And you've security, just, man. Let's not forget security.
Yeah, you've just triggered Akshay there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to pass this on to Akshay in a minute. But seriously, guys. I think this ties into the bigger debate that we'd sort of, you know, thought of talking about today. That what really comprises a premium smartphone anymore. But the fact that there are like full screen interstitial notifications about fucking Get Apps. I will get whatever app I want. I don't want you blasting that in my face on a 50,000 rupee phone. So over to you.
That's my only concern, to be honest, with the phone. I actually love the phone. Sure, as Dhruv said, that we're too used to the stock Android experience or the Oxygen OS experience. So I really can't knock on MIUI for that because I'm used to a certain thing. Of course, having no app drawer is annoying. That's just for me. That's a personal experience that I had with the phone. But the Get Apps and security apps is my main target here because I hate those fuckers. So it's not traditionally, in its sense, how Xiaomi serves ads in their phones. It's more like recommended app notifications, unwanted notifications that you keep getting. Now, Samsung does the same thing with their My Galaxy app. But it's not as frequent as how Xiaomi does it. There's a notification from Get Apps every 20 minutes. At least in my experience, I had that. And that got to me. That basically left a bad taste in my mouth. So, as for me, a phone is a personal device. Now, I understand that budget phones are a cutthroat segment and they have to make up money in some way, right?
Yeah.
I'm perfectly fine with budget phones doing that. But when you're getting into the premium space, anything above 40,000 bucks, it's a personal device that basically has intrusive notifications that just messes with your entire experience. If I didn't get that experience, I would have probably loved this phone a lot more.
Yeah.
I mean, I still love it, but it would have been at par with Oxygen OS OnePlus for me at least.
And in fact, just to add to your point, you know, and this is something that we talked about earlier as well, like with MIUI 12, like Xiaomi's actually doing good work on exposing how you can turn down your ads and notifications. So for a budget phone, that's actually fantastic because at least you can tone it down a bit, you can tweak it down a bit. There are certain compromises that you make to hit that price point or to get a phone at that price point. Okay, that's, we might not like it, but that's acceptable. But this is like, it's a 50,000 rupee phone. Like
it's not a cheap phone.
Yeah, it's the biggest, like the fastest growing premium phone segment in India. People are not buying as many 70,000 rupee phones as they're buying 50,000 rupee phones, and this is not the experience that they expect when they're upgrading from like a 20,000 rupee phone or whatever. This is like the first taste of a premium phone that so many people will get.
Yeah, and I think I can go into some more background on what is going on here. So there are two parts to this. One is the security thing that always runs in the background. Think of it as as the antivirus thing on your Windows machine or something. So it's meant to work the same way. Anytime you install something from the Play Store, it scans that app to make sure that there's no virus in the background. Now, this is useful in China, where there's no unified Play Store or any app store, mm-hmm. and there's like 20 different app stores to download stuff from. But this is not needed outside of China, where Play Store is there and you have Google Safety Net. So you don't really need that. I mean, you have Play Protect on every device now, right? They can't sell phones without that. So you don't technically need this feature. So I think down the line, Xiaomi needs to disable that entirely. I mean, you can still do that now. You just need to go to the security thing and toggle it and say, yeah, I don't want to scan new apps. And that's it. But most users will not do that. And they'll instead get that screen every time they try to install an app. And that is very irritating.
Most now users wouldn't know how to do that, even if they wanted to be honest.
That is also true. Yeah. It's not like everyone buying a Xiaomi phone is like a nerd who's going to sit in and dive into the settings for like an hour and a half. That's true. And the second thing is this Get Apps thing. So Xiaomi is saying that it's its own store and that it is serving up recommendations on what apps to download. Again, this is not necessary. And this is only for India, because I also have the Mi 10 Pro that's sold in the UK. And this is the UK version, and that shit is just not there. I do not get a single notification, and nor did I get any of this security screening notifications on the phone. So this seems to be just the case with India. And I think I know what's going on. I think they forgot to disable these things because this is the first time they're rolling it out. I think they need to fine tune the settings so that these things are no longer included in the version of MIUI that they're selling on the phone. I think they only made changes to the effect that they disabled ads, but they didn't go and think about the fact that the security thing is still on and the Get App still is thing on. So I think we will see them do better. But the fact that on day one, you still get these notifications is very annoying.
But Harish, tell me something. Like, since you have access to the global unit as well, now Xiaomi is importing this device, that much they've cleared up on their own as well.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think like it would just make sense to have the same global ROM that ships to Europe be available in India as well? It's not as if they're doing any specific customizations for Europe, are they?
Yeah, they're not doing anything. And I thought that was the case too. I think what's going on is that they got these devices into India a few months ago, but because of the lockdown, they haven't been able to update the software on it. Because I was looking at the MIUI versions on both the Mi 10 Pro and Mi 10, and the Mi 10 Pro is on 11.0.10, and the Mi 10 that is selling in India is still on 11.0.4. So I think once we actually get that update to the 0.10 release, all these things will be disabled, because by that point, they would have figured out that they don't need to have these in the ROM. So I think it's just that little bit of finesse that is missing. But then it hurt the brand a lot, because the first set of review devices that went out was on older software, and they technically didn't remove all of this. And that led to everyone freaking out that there's still all these spam notifications everywhere.
So I have to mention that it's not actually only exclusive to India. If you go read CNET's review, the reviewer is based in Hong Kong, and she was also getting these ads on Mi 10 Pro. Not even Mi 10, it was the Mi 10 Pro. So it's not only exclusive to India, and Reddit also is full of people complaining about it. So I think I don't know what they did with the operating system for this, but when I came across the CNET review for the Mi 10 Pro and saw her complaining about especially the security app and Get Apps, then I was like, okay, it's not only us. But as Harish mentioned that, you know, Xiaomi is recommending apps that you may need, I actually took a picture of the essential apps that they call it, that is Mi fans recommended. And none of them actually is something that you need. I think I sent a picture to you guys as well.
Yeah.
It's got games like Temple Run, Doctor Driving, Archery, Tank of, I don't know what the hell, 3D Truck something, My Talking Cat, I don't know what the hell these Miva video. These are not...
Actually, aren't these the same fucking apps that they recommend when you're setting up a cheaper Redmi phone?
Yeah,
I think so, yeah. But, you know, for me, like, we had this argument yesterday, the three of us, over our chat group, whether these are ads or not. And, of course, you guys said that these are not traditionally ads, more like spam. For me, it was like anything that is getting promoted and something, stuff that you really don't need, like Temple Run and Doctor Driving. For me, it feels like an ad. Now, not in the same sense how Xiaomi does it on their budget phones. But this was the problem that I had with the Mi 10. It's something that really, really annoys me. And I can understand that you have partnerships to do, to, you know, to adhere to. But don't do it every 20 minutes. That's all I'm saying, man. You want to do it, do it. Do it once in like a week, but not every 20 minutes. That's just
Yeah, like I said, I think the only version of the global ROM that they fixed was the UK one, because they have to comply with privacy laws in that part of the world. So I'm guessing they actually put in some time to look at what they can do and cannot and tweak the ROM there. But in other markets, they're just still winging it. So I think that is the bigger problem here. It's not the fact that MIUI still has these notifications or not. It's that Xiaomi isn't doing enough to tailor these devices accordingly. Because even on the Mi 10 Pro, if a Hong Kong unit is seeing ads, that's just a big no-no. So I think it boils down to more on what MIUI or what the MIUI global team is doing or not doing. And this is what I mentioned in my review too. I think I wrote like 1,000 words in the review just on MIUI.
I was just about to get to your review and the quote that I was like, you were quite brutal. I would like you to read that out to everyone who's listening in.
Oh, I don't
because that makes quote. That makes a lot of sense. Or do you want me to read it out?
Well, that's a plug right there. Yay.
Yeah. Let me. Why don't you continue? I'll find your quote.
Yeah, so that's the thing. See, it's not that MIUI is bad. MIUI has a lot of great things. I mean, I'm going to use this phone for the next month at least because I like what MIUI has to offer. I've always been using their interface. I think I started off with like MIUI 4 back in the day. What has changed is that over the last two and a half years, they've just not listened to any user feedback anymore. They just took a decision that they're just going to do whatever the hell they want. And that whole community feedback, what was basically what made MIUI what it is today. And they just didn't bother with that part. And that is making things worse for the brand, because now they don't have that core audience anymore that will suggest feedback and new features, because they've just abandoned them.
Yeah. So here's what you said in your review, and I completely 100% agree with this. It's like you said, at some point over the last 2 years, Xiaomi decided it didn't want to do that and started making unilateral decisions while cutting off the community. The same subset of individuals that made the brand what it is today. I don't think you can say it better than that.
Yeah. So it's that. It's basically that. It's that lack of communication. There's no back and forth going on anymore with MIUI. And that's why some of these changes just don't make sense in 2020. When you look at other Chinese ROMs, right? EMUI and ColorOS even. They've made huge strides. Yeah, they've made huge strides because all these brands now sell in the UK and other Western markets. But Xiaomi still feels like it's stuck in 2018. There's no changes. I mean, how the hell is there no app drawer on this out of the box?
Yeah, it's like they want to tell people what a software experience should be like instead of soaking in what people actually want.
See, but that's the thing, Akshay. I think every brand wants to develop a very personalized approach towards something. That's literally the only differentiating factor left at this point. Hardware is commoditized, and I mean, if everybody had stock Android, like, what would be the point of multiple phones? But that aside, I think you hit the nail on the head when you say that Xiaomi is stuck in the past, because their approach towards MIUI is in some ways actually quite positive, as we've seen with MIUI 12. But then there's some very antiquated design schemes in place. The way that they're approaching, you know, many of the security features or ad related features, it's just such a mess. I don't see a cohesive vision. And that's where I think, you know, even after trying out the MIUI 12 beta, it's just there's a lack of a cohesive vision. There's like skeuomorphism going on. There's some other sort of design elements going on. It's just not a complete package yet. They've improved massively. Whereas on the other hand, you know, ColorOS, like you said, Arish, like that has improved by leaps and bounds. It's at this point, it's a personal choice or a personal preference, I would say. But ColorOS on its own is a perfectly good and in fact, like a really good user experience.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, because I think with what other brands have done is recognize the need for globalizing their interface And they've actually hired engineers, global engineers and designers, to come up with UX changes that would be more in line with what customers need outside of China. I think that is lacking for Xiaomi, because even though Xiaomi has a local team in India, that all that team does from the looks of it is add localized features for just the Indian market, but not like a broader global view on what MIUI actually needs to be. I think they're missing that vision. I think there's somebody that needs to be there on the global MIUI team that needs to direct efforts so that it's aimed at a global audience. I just don't think they have that right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed on that.
I mean, and it's going to hurt the brand, right? Because on a 50,000 phone, all the conversation for the last 2 weeks has all been about this notifications and the fact that the software is still shit.
Yeah, it kind of takes the attention away from the great hardware the phone has, you know? Like, it has great cameras, you know, it has a wonderful screen, but it's, as you said, it's driving the conversation to the other end where, you know, their decisions are making the phone look like something it's really not.
Yeah.
I mean, by extension, I would say it's not even just this phone. I think if we look at the broader context, this has been going on for a while now. I would say at least the last year, the conversation around Xiaomi, which used to be overwhelmingly positive,
right.
That's
yeah.
really not the case anymore. There are other entrants. I mean, Xiaomi has successfully beat a lot of other competition to the market with their products. I'm not even going to go into volumes or market shares. That's a different story altogether. But just from the point of view of the final product,
right.
It isn't necessarily the best product in the market anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like one of the quotes some rapper said, and it's quite relevant here. And I have to say it, once you're on top, there's only one way to go, and that's down, right? And you have to work really hard to keep yourself up there. And that's the case with Xiaomi right now. They are the number one smartphone company in India, at least. But if they don't fix these issues, it will just lead to their downfall, man.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we've talked a lot about how one brand has fucked up. Now, I think we should segue into a brand that seems to be on top of things. And with that, I'm going to talk about the iPhone SE. Akshay, you've had the phone for a long time. What are your thoughts?
Not a long time, man. I've had it for like 2 days more than you.
Oh, really? That's it?
Yeah, it just came in this week.
Oh, I thought you've been using it for a while. But anyway, you've used iPhones the longest among the three of us. So give us your take.
I love it. It's the phone that will deliver the same experience that you expect from their iPhone 11 series, but on a far smaller phone with a chipset that is far, far superior to anything that I've used this year from 2019 to 2020. For me, it's a perfect gaming phone as well because, you know, the smaller screen can fit into those Periscope Nintendo Switch shaped controllers and you can play Apple Arcade games. It's got a great camera. At least that's what I've heard. I haven't used the camera, so I can't comment on it yet. But I've heard it's got good cameras for a phone that costs less than half than the flagship phones. And the fact that it's just giving me that nostalgia factor of the fact that it looks like it pays homage to old designs of the iPhone. And sure, some people would be like, you know, it has bezels, I don't like it, it's not up to date, it's 3 years old, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I understand all of that, but I still love it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting Harish, but so I put out a story the other day and of course it dragged out all the butthurt Android fanboys. Of course it did.
I mean, what do you expect?
See, it doesn't have the biggest battery. It does not have multiple cameras. It has a design that I would possibly call a modern classic, but it is not really as cutting edge as the Android phones.
Yeah.
And still, it does not matter. It does not matter because it's the same experience as a 1 lakh rupee phone. It's the same power as a 1 lakh rupee phone. And even that does not matter today. It matters because your phone will be supported 5 years down the line and it'll still be as fast as a 1 lakh rupee phone. The camera is good enough. It's actually pretty damn good. Like I don't have the phone with me, but I got a chance to try it out yesterday. And okay, maybe it's not as good as the flagship, but it gets pretty close, which is honestly the case for most of the Android competition in that price category. It's not as if they are delivering a pixel grade experience either. And the video quality, nothing else comes close to this on
comes
the Android
close to
side.
An iPhone.
Yeah, like
to any iPhone, even from 2 years ago.
Exactly.
Man,
like I mean, close. For that matter, I would say no Android phone comes close to an iPhone in video quality. What else is left? Like I would rather have a fantastic single camera than a turd.
Shitty
of three.
Four cameras.
Exactly.
Yeah. Although
for
as
once,
you mentioned
you know,
that.
Like for once, Apple actually has, I mean, to me, it seems that, you know, they've actually got a hand on the pulse of things. You know, they know what the market needs and they've delivered a product.
They absolutely have, because I got the phone yesterday. I need to make one thing about the size, because it's such a weird thing to go from a phone like the Mi 10 and the Mi 10 Pro with these large bezel-less extreme curves and all that to a phone that's like that has a physical home button and huge bezels, and the size itself is so tiny. That was so different to make that switch, but I mean, it's okay. It feels, I don't know, it feels like I'm using a phone that was from several years ago, but then it doesn't feel like that. It feels fast. It's fast, it's fluid, it runs everything, it's faster than anything on Android. So it's such a weird, there's that disconnect in my mind where I'm like, okay, this phone feels like an old phone, but it works like a new phone.
Like
I
a new
know.
Phone. Yeah. Yeah. It's so I have been having this feeling. So I've been using the iPod Touch, the new one, for a few months. And especially since I started working out, that's what I use. I didn't face the same issue of moving to a smaller device because the iPod Touch is even smaller than the SE. So I keep doing that on a daily basis. But the fact that the phone itself can do everything that your budget phone can do. If you want portrait pictures, it can do that. If you want you know, a decent video quality. I think the Mi 10 comes close to the video quality of the iPhone, but not, it's still quite lacking. But the fact that you can take amazing videos with the iPhone SE is by far my favorite thing. It's not something that people underestimate the importance of taking videos, especially for example when you're on vacation. For example, when I'm at nightclubs, I really want to capture moments that I'll remember, and the iPhone is the only reliable phone that can do that. And the fact that a 40,000 phone can do that is just even is a great deal. But I feel that Apple will probably make strides in this segment even more in the coming years because they've seen the success with SE. And they will probably bring their notch designs to a cheaper iPhone model in the coming years for sure. And that's the point when Android phones will have a problem in that price segment.
So let me give you some context on this. Like, because I did a lot of research for that story. Obviously, you guys are aware, but for our audience, the iPhone XR was actually the fastest selling, the highest selling premium phone in India. Mm-hmm. Not just for Apple, but generally in the country. Now, that phone got a lot of price cuts, discounts and stuff, which brought it down to 49,000 or so. And it did not have the latest chipset and all of that. Now, okay, sure, the iPhone SE, and meanwhile, the second highest selling phone for Apple was, I think, the iPhone 7, which was like a four-year-old phone, 32,000 rupees. Thing is, people want to get on an Apple phone. It is the de facto choice for an aspirational, you know,
device
brand,
in India.
In India. You might not like it or you might like it. I don't care. I don't care either ways. But in the mindset, anything, I mean, everything is an alternative to an iPhone for a whole lot of people. I'm not talking about enthusiasts. They know what they want and they will get whatever they want. And that's the thing, you know, 42,000 rupees, it hits the target with, you know, I want like a super powerful phone. Yeah, you're getting that. Nobody can argue that, you know, the iOS app ecosystem is literally the best. In terms of curation, in terms of quality of apps, like the same apps on Android and iOS. An iOS app is invariably better. You get more games, you get more tools for creation, media creation. You struggle to find quality
services.
You struggle to find quality media creation tools on Android. They just don't exist because there's no market for it. you get all of that in a 42,000 rupee package. That is a phenomenal deal.
Yeah, and even though the phone is costlier than what it is in the US, it's still a pretty great deal in the context of the Indian handset market, because as you mentioned clearly, there's just always a huge amount of interest in Apple phones in general, and the fact that you get the latest hardware. I mean, the chipset on this thing is better than what you get on the Galaxy S20 Ultra, and that costs more than twice the amount. So that's a no-brainer. There's literally nothing in the market today that is as fast as the A13 Bionic, and you can get it on a 42,000 phone, and that is absolutely crazy to me because that has never been done before.
I mean, this is the Poco F1 of Apple.
Of Apple, yeah. Literally,
that is true.
With faster updates, with faster security updates, with everything that you need, like Apple Arcade, Apple TV,
and an IP rating, ecosystem, and wireless charging,
wireless charging, and your entire Apple ecosystem that if you want to invest into, for example, the HomePod, or if you want to get into, you know, iTunes, Apple Music, or Apple Watch, whatever the hell, man, this is your gateway to the Apple world.
AirPods.
Everything, man, every single thing that you can think of, and it is coming at a price that is cheaper than your Android flagship phones, your wannabe flagship phones, and probably more powerful than every budget flagship phone as well. You know, so it's taking on the entire Android segment across the board, and it's doing it flawlessly. That's what I love about this phone.
Yeah, talk about launching the right phone at the right time, right? Because of what's going on with the world in general, nobody's looking to invest like a lakh in a phone right now. And with the iPhone SE, you really don't need to. I mean, this thing is going to get updates for at least 4 to 5 years. And you cannot say that for any Android phone. That is still, like, I'm writing a post saying that at least premium Android phones need to have longer update cycles, because they'll be irrelevant next to the iPhone if Apple continues to roll out something in the $400 to $600 or like that $40,000 to $60,000 segment, right? It'll just dominate the market. And sure, that premium category alone is like a tiny amount next to the budget segment that we have. But as you've mentioned in your post, I think earlier this week, Dhruv, that whole category itself is seeing more momentum than before as users slowly graduate, right? So that'll only pick up pace over the coming years. And I have one more point to make about the iPhone. I didn't really care about iOS until last year when I got the iPhone 11. But what I've noticed is that iPhones are great conduits for Google services. Like, out of the way, just better than most Android phones, actually. Just the fact that you can run all of Google services, and the fact that some of these damn things get updates before Android.
Yeah.
They're pretty great. Even if you're just fully sold on Google's ecosystem. Like how Microsoft did, right? When it switched to services, it focused on iOS first because it knew that iOS as a platform is better than Android. So even if you're like a diehard Android fan and Google, and you bought into all of Google stuff like I have, the iPhone is still a plenty good phone. So you don't need to leave all of that behind.
Every major game, every major app is first released on iOS. And that's for a reason, because that's the most number of users all over the world.
Yeah.
And as Ruv mentioned, the quality of apps between iOS and Android is just it's just a very big difference. If you open Facebook on Android and you open Facebook on iOS, you'll see the difference right there.
Yeah.
It's just a different experience altogether. And I think this phone is putting everyone on notice. Literally, everyone on notice that Apple is like, we're coming for you.
Exactly. And like, there's another point to be made, you know, this resale value. I mean, this phone, 2 years down the line, it's still going to sell for like 22,000, 23,000 rupees. You'll be able probably to get more. That much. Maybe right. Even 25,000. Yeah. You'll get 25,000 bucks for your phone. Good luck getting that kind of money for any 40,000 rupee Android phone.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a funny story on that front. I bought a Pixel 3 XL for my sister thinking that, well, she'd be interested in it, but she's all invested in the iOS ecosystem. She didn't want it. So I was like, fine, fuck it, I'll sell the phone. I think I probably used the phone for like a week in the US. And it's not even worth like 25,000 now. I'm like, what the hell? And this was a phone that costs, I think, 65,000.
Yeah. I think I mentioned like quite a few episodes ago that iPhone resale value is something that Indians really consider when they're buying the phone, because it's not only that they're getting most value out of the phone, it's also they can get most value after they're done with the phone. And Indians in general, when they're buying something, they look at the resale value, whether it's a car, whether it's a phone, whether it's a TV or whatever the hell. And Apple having this high resale value is another factor why people will be flocking to buy the SE.
Yeah, it just makes it so much easier to upgrade to a newer phone.
Yeah, it just makes it easier. It makes it more valuable. For example, you spent 42 grand and the fact that you'll get half your money back after 2 years, that's a great deal.
Yeah. You know? I think I'm the only idiot who goes out and buys Pixels without thinking about resale value. Yeah, I've learned that lesson.
I think someone did a story on, I think this was a few months ago, of resale values of every brand. And after Apple, it's Samsung, I guess, and then it's the rest of them. It really factors in, man, when you're buying especially phones, because when you want to upgrade, the resale value plays a huge factor.
Yeah, I mean, look, we all like the iPhone SE, and I'm actually astonished at how well it's holding up. I mean, I thought I wouldn't get used to the small screen, because I generally I've used huge Android screens in the past year, but it's not that big a deal. The old design doesn't bother me one bit. Like, the trade-offs that you make here are more than worth the... I mean, the small trade-offs that you make are more than justified when you consider what you're getting in return.
It didn't bother me with the Pixel 3. It's not going to bother me with the SE. As simple as that.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So yeah, if you're in the market for a good phone and you don't really care about Android that much, there is a good option for you in the iPhone SE.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't need to spend 60, 70 grand anymore. You can just get this and be done with it. I mean, at this point, every other iPhone, like everything else, is a nice-to-have feature.
Yeah.
This thing covers everything that you need in a good phone. Beyond that, I mean, buy an iPhone 11 if you really want two cameras, but it's not essential. Buy an 11 Pro Max. Max is, the 11 Pro is the one with
Pro,
three cameras.
Pro and Pro Max. Yeah. Max is the bigger one.
I mean, all of those are nice-to-have additions, but this phone covers everything that you need in an iPhone.
The one thing that it doesn't cover, and I was a little disappointed, was the fact that it doesn't have a dedicated night mode feature. Now, the A13 does support it, especially on the 11, 11 Pro. And I was quite baffled the fact that it wasn't present on the SE. So, that's the only disappointing thing.
Yeah, that's okay. But I like the fact that it has that cinematic video stabilization, even in 4K video. I think will make more of a difference for everyone who's out on TikTok making all these...
nothing can match an iPhone's video quality, and I think I may just use this as a camera for my gigs whenever that happens.
Actually, let me correct you there, because I think the Mi 10 is better than the iPhone when it comes to video recording. We didn't mention that.
That's what I said. I said it comes close. The audio quality is where it just falls off a little bit.
Sure, but it has a lot of features. I mean, there's now a vlog mode on the camera where it will basically stitch together all of your videos automatically.
But Harish, features versus I think we'll agree where I say that. I think iOS is all about getting shit done and not bogging down a user with too many options.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, right? Like, sure, you might be able to, you know, extract better picture quality or better video quality from something else. But it requires too much user intervention. It requires too much work from the user.
There you go.
Yeah.
Most people do not know how to work that stuff. Or don't care about it.
That I agree.
It's going back to Nokia's philosophy, right? It has to be user-friendly. And that's what iPhone does well.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Because my dad-in-law... I'll give you an instance, right? My dad-in-law was using the Poco F1, but then it broke somehow. So now he was in the market for a phone, and I was like, get the X2, maybe that's good enough. But this thing launched, I'm glad there was a lockdown because he couldn't buy a phone. So now I'm just going to ask him to pick up the iPhone SE. He likes the iPhone anyway. This thing is going to last him like 3-4 years without any issues. there's no Android phone.
This is one market that that people tend to ignore is the elderly crowd, like our parents.
Mm-hmm.
They got used to the iPhone 5, 6, 7, and they want to stick with that. They don't really want these notch phones or, you know, bezel-less phones. They really don't have no need for it.
Yeah. Those guys actually really like Touch ID as well.
They love the Touch ID. See, that generation has been living with physical buttons, with almost everything from their VCR players to their cameras to whatever the hell. And that one button can make a huge difference for them.
Yeah. Do you know who's the dumbass who suggested an Android phone to his dad-in-law when he was using an iPhone 6 and really liked it? This guy.
I wanted to take a different name, but I'm not going to take it.
No, he was using the iPhone 6 back in the day, and I was like, oh, don't use an iPhone. We have so many nice Android phones. Pick up a good Motorola, or I don't know what I recommended at that time even. But yeah, he switched. He really did not like it. And then I was like, switch to a few Xiaomi phones. You like them. And then he's like, sure. He bought the Poco. And then he had issues with the screen and we had to get that changed. And then he had issues with his mail client from work not working on phones. Because I think there was some issue with it on the Poco F1. Yeah, that was a good thing. Here's what most folks don't understand. You pay 20,000 for an Android phone, like the Poco F1, and you get a great phone for a year or two. After that, you have to pay 20,000 to get another phone for another year or two. So instead, if you get the iPhone SE, it costs 42,000.
It turns out to be the same.
Yeah, and it'll last you 3-4 years. And at the end of the 4 years, I think you'll actually make more money selling the damn thing.
Yeah.
So that's the thing I've realized in the last 6 months.
Yeah. I've been saying that for years and people don't bother listening to me, but I'm like,
fun times.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done explaining to people the value of an iPhone and the value of an Android phone. Just forget it. You'll get it. You'll get to know yourself.
No, I'll be honest. Like, there's a lot about Android that's great as well. So, you know, there is room for that.
I think I told you this when we first started talking. I think Android has improved so much over the years that I actually prefer using it over the iPhone. But that's just me, like, especially on OnePlus phones. I love how Android has come together in the past 2 years. It is a cohesive experience. It's just that there's too many players who have their own agenda. They don't really roll out the security updates. That's what's keeping Android behind. It's not Android itself. It's these number of brands that are not really committing themselves to their own products. It's Samsung. It's Xiaomi. It's these guys who are fucking it up. It's not Google. Google is doing what it has to do.
Yeah. For me, I would still prefer using like an Android phone as a daily driver because, well, that's what I like better. I mean, I'm comfortable with... I need that customization that I get with the time, the flexibility. But I also did the mistake of suggesting the Galaxy S10 and S20 series to all of my cousins, and literally everyone bought all of those phones. And then now I'm basically troubleshooting a whole set of things.
You should charge by the hour, man.
So here's what I realized. Not everybody knows what they want. When they say they're looking for a phone, what they're actually saying is they want something that just works for like a few things, two or three things, like email and video chatting or whatever. And they don't want to bother with anything else, is what I've realized. Because if I have to suggest something to somebody who's technically inclined, I'd still recommend something Android. But if I have to suggest something to my family members, now I've realized I'm just going to ask them to buy an iPhone. Because if something breaks, they can just take it to that goddamn Genius Bar and ask that guy instead.
Yeah.
You make a great point there, by the way. Like, I mean, I have like 300 odd apps installed on my phone. But if I had to distill it down, it's just maybe, it's under 10. Yeah. That's the active use. And now I am much more technically inclined than a lot of people out there.
Right.
And I'm assuming, you know, if I have 300 apps, a lot of people have like 30 odd tops, and they can whittle it down to like 5 apps that they use the most, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Snapchat, Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, maybe Twitter, maybe, and that's
and
about it.
Some music streaming services.
And email. Email and music streaming, if they're into it. I mean, Spotify or Apple. If you're on iPhone, you would be using Apple Music anyway, not Spotify as much.
Dude, you're way off. Where's all the TikTok nonsense? This TikTok, this Rizzo.
I was just getting to that. TikTok, and then I think you're done. I think there's like 10 apps that people use the most. Email being one of them. and they're done with it. After that, they don't, I mean, and a few games like Temple Run and shit.
You forgot Lykke, you know? Because everyone needs their pawn fix, and that thing is just a pawn.
What?
Something called Lykke. Or
what is that?
One of those things that was installed on a Xiaomi phone last year. So I
really?
Went in, yeah, I went in to see what it was about, and it was very sexually suggestive videos. So yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of like promoted tweets for similar apps. I think I shared a screenshot with you guys
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, I'm all about sexual freedom or whatever, but it's just cringe. Like what
yeah.
they
just not in my newsfeed.
Yeah, what's being promoted is just cringe.
Yeah,
but then again, I think these are all based on algorithmic changes.
I can tell you that I was not searching
no,
for
man,
anything
I've seen,
relevant.
I've seen sponsored fucking tweets from random individuals talking about random topics that has nothing to do with my life.
No, it has nothing to do with either of you. It's about what's trending in your area. It's all aggregated, right? I think it's that.
Okay.
Fuck
that. That makes sense.
So, Dhruv, I think there are a bunch of horny guys in where you live.
That's possible, I guess. Yeah, Ajay, by the way, before we move on to the next topic, whatever that is, what's the one feature that you guys would want, like, you know, Android to cop from iOS?
Hey,
AirPlay.
No, wait. All that nonsense. Wait, I was setting up the iPhone SE with the iPhone 11, and I love that transfer feature. That's so seamless.
Yeah, the scanning thing, right?
Yeah, that is particularly great. I want Google to steal that on the Pixel 5. I'm going to write an editorial on it. Because that was so cool. I switched between so many Android phones, right? I still have to enter my password and two-factor code and all that.
Welcome.
But there's nothing. You just scan some weird cloud-like thingy.
It's been there for a while, man.
But I didn't have two phones before.
Well,
I mean, two iPhones before.
Yeah. Well, I would really love AirPlay, kind of something similar to AirPlay to come over. They do have Chromecast, but it doesn't work the same way because there are not many Chromecast audio products out there. You know, like a smart speaker, apart from Google Assist, a Google Home stuff, and like it's not, you can't spot many third-party speakers who do that apart from Sonos and
some
others.
What? Everything works over Chromecast built-in, no?
Sometimes. I mean, sometimes I can't just play it, man, for some reason. It doesn't play for me. And the fact that it has AirDrop.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, they've tried to fix some of those things. And there's a bunch of Chinese companies are doing that. There's MiShare. But nothing really works like AirDrop, to be honest.
No, MiShare does. Because now it's picking up all the other Chinese, all the BBK stuff and Xiaomi. So,
yeah,
that's a big deal.
It's a big deal, but I like how AirDrop works with my MacBook as well. It works with my phone. It works with my iPod. It works with everything. That's the kind of cohesion that I require from MiShare or whatever the hell they're going to be using.
Yeah, that
that's
was Android Beam till the time they killed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I remember you crying about it. You love that feature, right?
I used it all the fucking time. But anyways, the feature that I love the most about iPhones and generally like, I mean, not even iPods. I think this goes way back to the iPod era, and you know how much I love iPods. I fucking love iPods. It's how easy it is to back up your phone. You connect your phone, click a single button, that's it.
Yeah.
And you want to refresh, like, do you want to format your phone will be back exactly the way it was. You're moving to a new phone, it will be back exactly the way it was.
Yeah.
There is literally nothing on Android that comes anywhere close to this.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about setting up a new iPhone, right? Because I had to do nothing. It took 15 minutes to transfer all the data from my old, well, not old, but whatever I was using, the iPhone 11 to the iPhone SE. Everything was preserved as is. My home screen layouts, everything. And it was incredible. Sure, the Google Play Restore thing works similar, but half the time something gets borked and one or two services don't transfer over, and then my home screen layout is changed. But it wasn't like this. It was seamless. It was so cool.
I mean, works as reliably. I've got bloody like sync profile set up to back up my Nova launcher profile every weekend.
Yeah, it still doesn't happen. Right?
No, not even on Google Drive. It can't do Google Drive backup automatically.
Yeah.
So like I have a sync profile where on folder sync, where, you know, it'll back up once a week and go up and stay on like a Google Drive folder because I might have to switch to another phone or whatever. There's like, I've had to do this for so many fucking apps. It's ridiculous. Like,
yeah.
That Google backup is not just baked in everywhere.
In my review of the Meta, and this is the one thing that I really found annoying of BUI, was the fact that you don't have an app drawer, it makes it harder to organize your apps.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you can't bring your home screen from previous Xiaomi phones is a little annoying. That's what I love on the iPhone, that you can, it looks identical to your old phone. You have memories, right? Memory muscle, where your app is stored in what folder, and you just bring that over with the new phone. Samsung does this well with their phones, to be honest.
Yep.
I have to give them credit where it's due. They do the same exact thing as iPhones. But this is why I found Meet 10 annoying, was that there are 200 apps. There's no app drawer. And I just don't want to spend time reorganizing this shit. It's just not... I need to take out half an hour for that. I don't want to do that. I want it to be the way it was. Or give me a clean slate and I'll organize it from the very beginning.
Dude, don't even get me started on those dirt phones that don't even let you install a custom launcher.
Yeah, I use Eevee for that, and that works for me.
There are phones which won't let you install that at all.
I know.
I
did not know that third-party launchers did not work with gestures. That was a thing with Android 10, but then it wasn't with Mi 10 because I think it was using an older fork of Android 10. But yeah, that was a thing. So that would have been very...
Eevee works with their native gestures. It doesn't really mess with that. So that's what I like Eevee
about. Oh, we should recommend what launchers we use. I use Launcher on any phone that
I
install on.
I use Eevee, EVIE, on every phone apart from OnePlus phones.
Okay.
I'm on Nova, and I have been for many, many, many years now. It works for me. But I've paired it up with KLWP lately for a bit more personalization. Mm-hmm. So I had like, you know, this a couple of widgets and stuff that I use. So KLWP, like in case the listeners don't know about it, it takes a very different approach to having widgets. Now, the way that Android works, often, you know, dynamic widgets will stop updating after a while. But KLWP basically lets you create a live home live wallpaper and integrates the widgets into it. So essentially, you're setting a wallpaper, but it is picking up all the dynamic elements, which is really cool. It's a little hard to explain without actually seeing what it is all about, but you can do an insane amount of customization. In fact, like, it'll also... So depending on whatever launcher you're on, you can set your widgets only in certain grid sizes, but that's not the case with this. It's completely customizable, and you can set animation actions directly on the wallpapers. So, you know, I could be tapping into, I don't know, like if it's a record player widget or whatever, like I could be tapping somewhere on that to launch my favorite music player, or on the other side of the record to launch a podcast player, whatever. Like, point being, it's extremely customizable.
You should do a guide.
Maybe I should. Yeah, that's that. Thanks for the idea. Content sorted for next week.
So, we've talked about two phones. Now let's talk about a phone that we won't be able to use for a few months if leaks are anything to go by. And that is the Pixel 4a. So a new leak broke this week saying that the launch was pushed to July 13th. It was meant to be in May, but then it got pushed to June. And now it's going to be unveiled on July 13th. And they may not even be available until August. So what do you guys make of this decision from Google?
I mean, there's nothing left to reveal. The phone has leaked on numerous YouTube videos in the past 2 months. Apart from the software experience, I don't think Google has much to talk about there. And the fact that it's so late that it's not going to be relevant anymore.
Yeah, I'm talking about the fact that folks that are even interested in getting the phone and are looking for a new phone won't be able to get this until July or August.
They should have just skipped the entire 4 series, in my opinion, and just come out with a new product in October later this year. It's just an unfortunate time, to be honest, and Pixel really doesn't move units anywhere, to be honest. And even the camera lead guy left Google a few months ago, and I don't know what's happening there, to be honest. I really don't know.
Yeah, so it's a really weird thing what they've got going on the hardware front, because I was reading Sundar Pichai's interview with The Verge, and he makes a case for the hardware team and says that they're committed to the hardware division for the long term, that they're just not going to pull out of the segment. But there's also all these very puzzling decisions that they've done, because in that interview, it was revealed that Rick Costello knew that the battery on the Pixel 4 may not have been great, but then the phone made it to market anyway. So it feels like with every launch, Google somehow finds a way to sabotage its own phones. So with the Pixel 4a, the phone itself is looking to be really nice. I mean, it's going to have a great camera. It has decent internal hardware, and it may even retail for $50 less than the iPhone SE in the US at like $350. But the fact that it's not going to come till July means that nobody's going to care about it once it actually is available.
Yep, that's basically it.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, I mean, will anybody even care in July?
No.
No.
I mean, I don't care if it's not going to come until July, because in July, there'll be, at the end of July, we'll see the Note. And then October again has to be Pixel 5. So they don't have a lot of time between.
And then there's a new iPhone in the middle.
Yeah, there's a new iPhone in the middle. Is that going on this year? Didn't they delay?
Yeah, it's definitely happening.
Okay.
And it's going to happen in September. And it's going to be a shit show for Pixel, to be honest, because I don't know what the hell they're doing. I really love their phones. I just.
Now that we're on the topic of. Just like moving beyond the Pixel 4a. So, what's up with those rumors that the Pixel 5 is going to have like a Snapdragon 700 series chipset?
Talk to you later. That's what I'm going to tell the Pixel.
I don't even know how to vocalize it. It's just. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we could see that. We could visualize it. We could see it. You were trying to vocalize it, but you couldn't.
It's just so fucking dumb. Like, they've been constantly making mistakes for the last 4 years. At some point, somebody at Google needs to say, okay, we need to bring in some fresh management here just to change things up. Because you cannot just make the same fucking mistakes year and year and year again and think that these phones are going to sell. Sure, brand value counts for a lot. Google has a lot of passionate fans. But they're just not going to pay for inferior hardware, particularly now in 2020 when every phone is great.
Yeah, and it's just unfortunate that people don't really trust Pixel. I'm not going to talk about Google Pixel anymore as much as they do with other phones. Because, you know, they keep changing their minds every year. Pixel 4 was a disaster all over the world. And even if there are hardcore Google fans, they're still not buying their phones in huge quantities, you know, make the line as successful as everything else that you can buy in the market. And as we can just go back to a few episodes, like 3-4 episodes ago, whenever we spoke about Pixel 4, it's down to the fact that their own teams are not communicating with each other. And communication is key here. If you're not going to talk to your own teams and have internal problems, you're going to end up with an inferior product. It happened with the Pixel 4 and it's probably happening with the Pixel 5. And eventually the Pixel line will die out because it won't sell as much as they expect it to. Yeah. I don't want that to happen.
I think you've pretty much nailed it, Akshay. I'll put it in a different way. Google knows how to make a fantastic camera. Google knows how to make a pretty damn good operating system. Google does not know how to make a phone. And buying HTC did not help them out.
Yeah.
Because HTC did not know how to sell their own phones anyway.
HTC knew how to make a phone, but it did not know what the customers were looking for. So it made whatever the hell it wanted, thinking that customers would buy it anyway. And that team is a part of Google now.
That's exactly what Pixel is. Exactly
what
now.
Pixel is.
Yeah.
Jinx. I'm already, let me jinx that shit.
So that's why it is what it is. Because I don't know. I don't see any leadership when it comes to Google.
It's not only Pixel though, it's Stadia as well. They've dropped the ball in everything they do. It's just that the execution is not there. They have great ideas. They just can't finish you go to the finish line with it.
Yeah, I think
that's the problem.
I think with Google, it's always been that. I think they have like such lofty goals. Look at the deal with Stadia. They're like, oh, you just need a 25 Mbit line to play any game you want over the cloud, without them realizing that even in the US, that's like 10% of the market that actually has access to the level of broadband that is a minimum requirement for Stadia. They did not even think of that. Same with...
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Just not for 2020.
Yeah. And same with the Pixel 4 with the Soli and Motion Sense.
Soli chip. Yeah.
They had such great ideas when they demoed it at I.O. a year ago. But when it actually showed up on the phone, it was such a shit show. I mean, I disabled that thing after a month because it just did not work. So I think it's just that.
Okay, tell me this. How do you make a phone? How do you start making a phone which you cannot market in a third of the world? Which you cannot sell in a third of the world?
But that's the thing, right? They did not even know that they could not sell this phone in all these markets when they were making the phone. So in that,
fucking retards.
No, that's what here.
The R&D was not right in place.
So here's the thing, that the one point that stood out for me during that interview at The Verge, that should be a recommended reading, by the way. That was a fantastic interview. Was where Sundar says that he was evaluating Google's 2021 hardware strategy during the day of that interview. So everything, all the hardware products are basically finalized a year or so in advance, right? So whatever Google is going to launch a year from now, it would be finalizing things now. So with the Pixel 4, it is highly likely that nobody even thought that that feature would not work in a whole section of the world until they got to the point where they were ready to sell the phone. I mean, they only made that decision a month or two in advance, right?
But that's my point. Like, this is Google we're talking about. It's not a startup. It's not, say, like Nextbit or whatever. How can you start a multi-million dollar process, like spend like, I don't know, like $100 million on doing R&D for a phone? I mean, let's say like Sony was something unique. There's nothing else on the market quite like that in a phone. That must have cost them a bomb. Yeah. And generally making a phone costs a bomb. So say, you know, I don't know, say like $100 million or whatever. How do you sign off on an expenditure like that without even knowing that you can't sell this phone?
But that's the thing. That's what I'm talking about.
It's a big part of research and development. They just ignored the research part. They only researched the hardware. They did not realize who the hell they could sell this to.
They
never looked at that part.
What was the corporate licensing team doing?
Do you think people are leaving Google? It's because of this reason that they have no sense of direction.
It's not even that. I mean, the issues are more basic here. Leave Soli aside. Yeah, that was a big miss from them. You have to realize that with the Pixel 3 XL, they put 4 GB of RAM in a phone, in a flagship phone that costs like $900. That, I mean, the thing launched at what?
For a platform that needs more than 4 GB.
Yeah, 80,000 it was when it launched in India. 4 GB of RAM. What the hell were they thinking? I mean, you launch the camera and everything in the background would shut down because there was just no usable RAM. So I think it's a more basic issue that they have a lot of good product guys. They're some of the best in the business based on the software that we see. But I think they need somebody who knows hardware and who knows how to make hardware that will actually matter to customers, that they can sell hardware that customers are actually looking for. So I think that is what is missing in Google.
They need a good product. They need a good product manager. That's what they need. Even if they come up with a great hardware phone, they don't need to figure out how to sell the damn phone now.
Hey, Hugo Bara should go to Google.
He would change that company. But then again, he would get involved.
I mean, he was there. He was there at the beginning, right? So he knows the team.
Before we move on, I think there's a different argument in place. Like, they don't need to figure out how to sell the phone. They've actually been doing a really good job with it. The marketing is great. Whatever they do, like the entire branding around the Pixel brand name as such, there's a lot of awareness about that phone now. It's much more basic than that. The product is not competitive in just too many ways. And Either they're like completely oblivious to what everybody else is doing and what the customers really need, or they're too cocky about it. And I think it's a mix of both.
I think it's just being oblivious, because my biggest issue with the Pixel 4 XL was that it was a $1,000 phone that, and they removed that original quality uploads to Google Photos. Like, why the fuck would you do that? You're still charging $1,000 on a $400, $300 Pixel 3A. I understand. Sure, you have margins. But on a fucking $1,000 phone, you're not giving the feature that actually sold, that was actually a big sell to customers. Why do it? It's not like it's going to cost them any money. They own like half the data centers in the world. It's not going to make any difference to Google.
You know, Dhruv, I'm going to go back to the point you mentioned that they know how to sell phones. Being from a marketing background, the one thing that I don't like about Pixel is it's always targeting iPhone users. Now, what I want Pixel to be is to have its own identity. I want them to do the proper market research they need to do so that they can capture a segment of audience that don't really have the money for an iPhone, even in the US, right? These are things that companies like OnePlus and Xiaomi are doing well. A OnePlus phone is more successful in the US than a Pixel phone all over the world, you know, like anywhere else in the world. That speaks volumes. And
I mean, I think
it's just that they need to get over the fact that we need to target iPhone customers. What they need to do is carve a niche for themselves, an identity for themselves, and just focus on great products that the people need.
I mean, instead I think of
going and targeting
right.
an audience. It's a very short-sighted strategy, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think you're right for the higher-end phones, for sure. But, I mean, I think where I was coming from was that entire playful branding that they have going on with the Pixel 3a series, it's actually worked for them. They've shipped pretty decent...
That's perfectly fine, but it's not a long-term strategy, what I'm trying to say.
It's not entirely like an iOS copy either. Like, it is unique enough. But that's my personal take on it.
Oh no, I'm not talking about the messaging part. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm not talking about the cute funny jabs it takes on other people and what their advertisements look like.
Yeah.
I'm talking about real market conducting market research and then, you know, marketing the products to those guys. I'm not talking about how the advertisement should look. That's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
They just need to get over the fact that you need to target iPhone users with, you know.
Yeah, no, I was coming from a broader, you know.
I know what you meant. Yeah. I'm talking about the on-ground marketing that they need to do. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Anyway, leave it. Every time we start talking about Pixels, we go into this rant for 20.
We should just do an entire rant episode of Pixels.
I'm sure we'll do that once we have more details on the 4A. Anyway, we'll end the show with a quick segue into gaming, because there was excitement around this. Some game, I think it's called The Ghost of Tsushima? Tsushima.
Yep.
Tsushima.
Yep. Ghost of Sushi.
Tsushima.
Tsushima.
Sushi.
Oh, wait, I want sushi, man. Sushi.
Yeah. Ghost of Tsushima.
Okay, clearly I don't know anything about the game. You guys go on.
Samurais.
You will love this game because it's Samurais. Based in feudal Japan, basically an Assassin's Creed based in Japan. That's what we all wanted.
And you're fighting off the Mongol invasion.
Whoa, yeah. That's so cool.
With Sony's finesse of storytelling.
Nice.
Is
it made by Sony, one of the Sony studios?
Yeah. It's a first.
Sucker Punch. Sucker Punch Studios that made Infamous. It's a first party studio that has made Ghost of Tsushima and. The game just looks phenomenal. I would suggest go watch the video if you haven't already. I know Dhruv has. I'm talking to Harish. Just check out the video, how it plays. It's incredible. It does not have any waypoints, so you have to discover shit on your own in the world. There's guiding winds that you have to follow, and birds will direct you to your objective. And once you get an objective, then you have to fight these badass samurais. Or assassinate them like you do in Assassin's Creed. It's just a great looking game that is set in Japan, feudal Japan, and you just get to play with swords and shit. Something that I always wanted Ubisoft to do, but they never did it. And
so I'm going to give you another reason to play this game, and that's my favorite feature of the game, feature or whatever. You can play the entire game in black and white, cinematic black and white with grain, like an old school Akira Kurosawa movie, And
yeah,
oh that's my god, it looks incredible. It looks
phenomenal.
Okay.
Harish, just watch the half an hour video after this.
Oh, wait, but again, this is a console game then. It's not going to come to Windows.
Yeah.
Nope.
It may come on what's that Sony's
PS Now
streaming service, I forget.
PS Now.
It'll come on PS Now on the PC. It not right now, right away. Sooner or later it'll come. And yeah, I think it's a PS exclusive, which is why it makes it worth buying a PS4.
Wait, so when is it coming out? Do we have to wait until the PS5?
No, it's coming out in
July. July 17th.
But why launch any new games now when there's PS5 coming out?
Okay, so if I'm not mistaken, the last game Sucker Punch came out was the new Infamous, which launched when the PlayStation 4 launched.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's this
yeah.
is all the.
Yeah, it was a launch title for the PS4.
For 7 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
More or less.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, Infamous had fantastic, there's this certain fluidity and the dynamic action was just incredible. There's very few games that have been able to really come up to how fluid the movement is.
Spider-Man, that's the only
one. Spider-Man for sure. But I mean, so there's this element, if you haven't played Infamous, you can fire essentially thunderbolts from your hands or whatever.
Oh,
and you're sucking
no.
and
what
you're
I'm
sucking
thinking
in power
of is that...
from electricity lines.
No. Yeah, I'm thinking of Injustice, that Street Fighter.
Yeah, yeah, that's the different game.
No, what is Infamous?
Yeah, that's...
Okay, so you...
It's a superhero open world game made by Sucker Punch where you can play either as a good guy or a bad guy and you pump up your super level, your superhero powers by sucking out electricity.
Okay,
and...
I love this game, so I'm going to...
Even I love this game. I love this game as well.
Okay, so it's completely dynamic. You're not just good or bad. You can be whatever you want, okay? So, it's not as if you choose this right in the beginning. It's completely based on your actions, which was pretty amazing, on the PS3 and also, as a launch PS4 title. And essentially what you do is that you pull in power from different sources, you charge up your meter, essentially, by sucking in power from an electricity pole. And then you can fire that as an electricity bolt. But the cool thing is that you can also ride electricity cables on top of them.
Yeah.
And you can jump and you can essentially create shockwaves of sorts to sort of fly across buildings. I love this game. So I'm quite excited about what Sucker Punch.
But Ghost of Tsushima is nothing like that though.
Yeah.
Okay. But sounds
and to answer your question that why are you launching this game towards the end of the generation when there's a new console coming, I'm pretty sure it's gonna have the smart delivery feature where if you buy it on PlayStation 4 and when you switch to PS5, you can play the game on your PS5 as well. I don't think it's gonna be a separate title for PS5, but it'll run on your new console
as well. Is it going to have all the cool new features that the PS5 has with the 3D audio and all that sexy stuff?
We don't know.
They haven't said a thing about it, so I really don't know. I think we'll know on June 4th. That's the rumored date where they will reveal everything about new PS5 games and how it will work with the new architecture and sound, everything else, how fast the SSD is going to be. They're going to get into more detail. It's not confirmed yet, but on June 4th, I think that's when it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to wait a few more weeks to answer your question on that. But apart from that,
talking
you can
about
play this game.
I think that's...
I know what you're getting at.
Unreal Engine 5.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a
probably
demo.
Probably the most important engine for gaming ever made. The Unreal Engine 1, 2, 3, 4. And now the fifth one is coming out. And I think most of your beloved games like Batman Arkham series or the upcoming Minecraft Dungeons... or Fortnite, or PUBG, name it. You name it. All the biggest games of this generation uses Unreal Engine in their games. And the fact that they have a partnership with Sony for their future games also, that's just incredible.
Wait.
Gears of War.
PUBG uses the Unreal Engine?
Yeah.
I thought they were on
Unity. No, they're on Unreal Engine, which is why they had a huge lawsuit with Epic Games, because they were you copied our shit and launched Fortnite instead.
Yeah.
So... and the fact that they're also going to give the first million that you ever make from the game as a as a discount that developers don't have to pay Epic as a form of license fee. So it's, I think that we're gonna see a lot of games in the next, in the new generation using Unreal Engine 5. It looks absolutely phenomenal. Tim Sweeney has said that the PS5 is probably the best thing he's ever worked on for the engine, and it's far superior to even modern PCs right now because of the SSD. I'm not going to believe that, but okay.
What really stood out for me in the demo was the Nanite engine that they talked about, which is basically doing particle level, like pixel level rendering. And instead of using game assets, they're taking movie quality assets in the games, which is incredible because those are usually of a much higher level of detail. Since you know, like you'll have like slow shots or single shots versus a game where everything's dynamic. So, you know, you don't necessarily need that level of detail on, say, a rock. Or, you know, say,
let's do a step. So here's the thing, though, which, you know, Twitter is full of these PlayStation fanboys talking about how powerful it is, etc., because of the Unreal Engine showcase. Now, this was a tech demo. That means developers can take advantage of these features when they're making their games. But in most cases, developers don't really end up using every feature that's showcased in a tech demo, right? 10 years ago, NVIDIA did a similar showcase where they showed off real-time physics.
Right.
And till date, no one has really used that feature ever in their games. And same with Unreal Engine 4, it had some features that that are completely ignored by game developers.
Yeah.
It's a more of a presentation for developers than showing that this will be how graphics will look like on PlayStation 5. People don't need to look at it face value. It's all up to the developers how they use the engine and what assets they use and what features they use from that new engine.
Yeah,
I mean, you're right there. I think, like, really, I'm not excited for this from a PlayStation 5 perspective, to be honest. I'm excited because this is actually, like, I mean, leave aside Microsoft's weird-ass showcase event, this is our first this is our first taste of what next-gen can potentially look like. And that's what I'm excited about. You know, that this is where we will be within, like, say, 2 to 3 years. Definitely not at launch.
It'll be awesome, man. It'll be awesome. And the fact that it's a new engine, developers will start using it now, and they will take full advantage of the engine to its full potential in 2-3 years, maybe 4 years. Depends how good they are with the engine. And if it's anything like how the current generation is, it's going to blow everything out of the water. Games are going to look incredible.
Sure. Do we know how much the damn consoles are going to cost?
No, not yet. But anything above 450. That's
450 to 500.
Is it going to be for just $500, really?
They make money from softwares.
That's insane,
they can't afford
man.
To go more expensive than that.
It's always been in the case of consoles that they make loss on the hardware, but they make up for it from games, from their digital stores, from their subscriptions like PS Plus, Xbox Gold, Xbox Live.
What does PS Plus do anyway?
So it lets you play online with everyone else, and the fact that you get free games as well.
Oh, that's it.
Every month.
Yeah, you get like 2 to 3. Sometimes 4 free games a month, and you need that for online multiplayer, which is like in contrast to PC multiplayer where you don't actually need to pay for online
anything.
But yeah, I mean, actually, it's they lose money on the consoles at launch, but it actually becomes cheaper over time. I think Sony got profitable on the PlayStation 4 by the time the PS4 Slim came out.
Right.
2 years ago, something like that.
Yeah. So it works out in the long run. Look at it like this. The PS4 today is running the hardware from a mid-range laptop from 2011.
Yep.
Yeah.
I forgot that these things have a life cycle of like, 7-8 years. So yeah, that makes sense.
7-8 years. But this one has been the shortest by far. It's around 6.5 years.
Okay. Cool. I'm sure we'll be talking a lot more about what Sony and Microsoft do over the coming weeks. Do we know when there's like a showcase or one of these things next?
Yeah.
Well, the Xbox is already out.
June. No. There's one showcase by Microsoft for
their
exclusives in June.
Mm-hmm.
Sony has one in June, rumored. Ubisoft has in July. And we'll get to know more in the coming weeks.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
we'll
it's
be talking
the summer
more.
Of games.
Yay, games.
Summer of games.
Fun. Cool.
Harish, I'm going to make you a hardcore gamer. Don't worry, by the end of this year.
Fine. Yay, more things to waste money on. Because that's what I need. I mean, it's not even about that. Yeah, it's the fact that I buy these games and never play them. I have like a library of 600 games on Steam now. I think I played like 1/10 of them.
That's why you need to be like a PlayStation gamer, a console gamer, and because it's more expensive and you're not going to be spending so much money.
Yeah.
And go physical. So you're also constrained by how many games you can keep at home.
No. Yeah. That has not. I have a bookcase.
No. He'll keep staring at it. Like, Fuck, I should get to that game.
Oh, I think, yeah.
Oh, whereas on a digital library, he's like, oh, I don't even know what games I have. But this one is going to stare right at his face.
Yeah, that's a great point about it.
So I know, like, we're, like, running way over time. But I'm, like, seriously, I'm in the same boat as you, but on PlayStation. But literally, like, the only way that I could fix this was I do not buy a game till the time I've finished the last game.
Yeah.
That's literally the only way I'm going to get done with the game. Unless, you know, it's a game that I know I'm not going to be finishing or I just can't get into, which is Bloodborne.
It's a very old school, thinking. Remember from the PS1, PS2 days when we used to first we need to get rid of this game. Only then our parents would let us buy a new one.
I mean, for a while, that's exactly what happened. I had 4 games running simultaneously on the PlayStation and I'm like, I'm not devoting enough time to either game, and these are all like 60, 70, 80 hour epics. So, you know, if you're playing 4 games simultaneously, you are not going to finish them.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. What game are you looking forward to the most in the next, what, month or so?
I mean, I've got a backlog to go through, so there's a lot on my wish list already. But I'm cautiously optimistic about The Last of Us 2. Despite everything, all the drama around it. Yeah, I still haven't read the rumors, so, you know, whatever.
Don't read it.
But a game that I'm actually really excited about for today is, like, I'm going to get it up on my Switch sometime today, is the new Hatsune Miku.
Oh, that looks nice.
I love Hatsune Miku games, Vocaloid games. Actually, I just love rhythm games in general, and this is the first Hatsune Miku game coming on the Switch. And it's got all the DLC from the PlayStation. And I think it's just the perfect platform for it. So, yeah, I'm excited for that.
Good to know. What about you, Akshay?
I can talk about it. I'm playing Minecraft Dungeons right now. The embargo lifts on Monday. So, I'm currently playing that and Assassin's Creed Odyssey. But what I'm looking forward to is actually Ghost of Tsushima. I don't want to look too far into games right now because I want to deal with them one by one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not too excited for Last of Us 2 because I've seen the leaks. Forget reading. I've seen it. But I still am quite intrigued by that game. Just not as excited. But I know how Naughty Dog is and there will be a surprise there. Plenty of it in the game. But Ghost of Tsushima is one game that I've been looking forward to since the day it got announced.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I've always wanted an Assassin's Creed set in Japan and they're fulfilling that for me.
Cool.
So I want that. I just want to get my hands on that game.
Akshay, gaming confession. I want to play Last of Us 2 just for the hype, which is why I played Last of Us 1. I found it to be an incredibly overrated game.
You've told me this before. You've mentioned it in the podcast before.
It's fine. I just feel that it is incredibly overhyped. I know what they achieved with it.
Okay.
But
I can already tell that you two will be talking
I'm going to end it on this one sentence. The level of storytelling, the humanization of the story in that game has never been seen in a game before. That's why I love it.
I think at that point, I truly believe God of War did it better.
It also came after.
While that is true.
So it had something to look
up
to.
You know what? We'll do this another time.
Let's end it by saying that games are getting better with time.
They've always been getting better with time.
But storytelling shouldn't be dependent on technology.
True.
Yeah, it shouldn't be.
But I don't know. Then God of War is a better game than Last of Us, says Dhruv.
I mean, Final Fantasy VII had a great story and that came out in 1996. Chrono Trigger had a fantastic storyline that is still one of the best and that came out in the early 90s.
It's just the way the story is told in Last of Us that I love. It's not what the story
is. Enough.
I just love the narrative.
Yes, narrative, games, storytelling, consoles. Wow, yay. Lot of good things to look forward to. Okay, now let's just end it here because we've already been talking for 90 minutes and we should leave something for next week. So we're going to end our conversation here. Thanks for listening. If you've actually listened till this far, wow, you've made it. So we'll see you again next week. But for this week, that's all from us. Stay safe out there. Do the whole social distancing nonsense if you're going out. Be careful. And we'll see you again next week. Bye.
What's up, guys? Bye.
And Last of Us is not over it.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Bye-bye. Enough.
Bye. Cheers.